And, of course, as we begin our third and final hour on your home for the best live and local coverage of the Broncos and the NFL, Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan, we know that our in-studio guest, Dr. Rick Perea, is a man of consummate integrity. But we remind you again, much to his chagrin, I accept the fact that you were unaware of this, you are decked out in red or black on this Football Friday, just a couple of days before the Broncos and Raiders re-engage. And, you know, lest we think this is going to be a walk in the park, and I know you've argued to the contrary on that, as has Alfred Williams during the course of this past week as part of the drive with Big Al and D-Mac every afternoon, 3 to 6 here on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. I think a caller mentioned this a little bit earlier. Hey, until last year, the Raiders had a four-game winning streak going here in Denver.
Yeah.
Up until the Broncos obviously won the game last year.
Yeah.
Head-to-head here in Denver and made it a sweep of the season series out in Oakland. But Broncos haven't swept in the last 5 years beyond that one occasion last year.
Right. Yeah. And I think, you know, the Raiders, I'll go out on a limb here and say they're well coached. I mean, I think Allen's doing a good job with them. I think the first game of the season told me a lot. You know, a lot of times first game of the season, you know, teams score a lot based on defenses aren't quite ready to play, offenses aren't quite ready to play. But, you know, their first game, they battled tough, and, you know, they kept the score low. I think it was a 20-13, 20-17 mm-hmm. game, somewhere in that neighborhood. But that raised my eyebrows a little bit.
Andy caught them at the end, but they look good at Indy.
Yeah, and so I think that the Raiders are – an up-and-coming team. They're not quite to the echelon of where Kansas City is right now, but I think they're a team that once you change the climate and culture through coaching, you know, that team cohesion can change in a hurry, and you can see the difference right away.
We were talking the last 5 years in the AFC West, we have seen only four winning teams, not 10-plus win teams, four winning teams. Denver last year, in 2010, Kansas City and San Diego, and in 2009, San Diego. That's it over the past 5 years.
Right.
As far as four winning teams in this division, and you made the point, yes, at some point, if that's been going on, if the division has been bad, this bad for 5 years, only four winning teams in 5 years, it's inevitable
yes.
that one or two or maybe even all three of the teams that have basically been down, and especially in the last 2 years where Denver's won the division title both years, they're going to jump up.
Absolutely.
It can't get worse.
That's right. And, you know, in the world of psychology, as I've talked about many times on this station before, we talk about qualitative and quantitative
right.
research. And in terms of quantitative, you know, there's ebbs and flows. I mean, it, you know, the AFC West has been down for a number of years quantitatively in terms of wins. And it's time. It's time that these teams, you know, come back. And by the time, you know, you make coaching changes – and, you know, there's been coaching changes in San Diego, Kansas City, the Raiders.
Yep.
It's time that some of these teams come back up. So I think it does, you know, if we use the law of probability, which we use in psychology, you know, it's time that these teams come back quantitatively. And then when you mention the qualitative aspect, you see that some of these coaches are making a real climate and culture change in those
yep.
organizations. You know, it's not surprising that those other three teams are really kind of on the upswing again.
You spoke earlier about attention being paid to the elemental factors in the game, the blocking and tackling, football in the trenches, and how Reed has helped the Chiefs in that regard. But I know you're also a big fan, and you pushed this last time and again today. I think you want to get to this idea that new ways of creative and abstract thinking have to be developed, particularly from a coaching perspective in a league that's gone offense crazy.
Yes.
That particularly on the defensive side of the ball, there is a need for a new kind of thinking, reinforced thinking, maybe even from the outside looking into a defensive operation and coming up with some different ideas, some different theories.
Yes. You know, I just want to give a little bit of background to the listeners. You know, one of the things I do in my organization is I work with organizations, helping them maximize their human capital, motivation, performance. And I do that with businesses, with schools, and with athletic teams. And one of the things I've been privy to and very fortunate is I work with a lot of businesses. You know, there's businesses like Apple, IBM, Microsoft that are hiring what we call cognitive scientists. And they're people that come in and they're creative in their thinking. And the notion is that, you know, for example, a football team, you're too busy being a head coach. You're too busy being a defensive coordinator to be able to see the macro. you know, position, not just the micro, not the day-to-day nuts and bolts, X's and O's, but how is leadership really being deployed from a macro level? How can you be creative? How can you think about, you know, ways and innovative ways to reach your players and create different aspects and elements of maximizing their performance? Let me give you an example. So the spread offense has really revolutionized the game. You know, it's sped it up. The things that the Broncos are doing, the things that a lot of the offenses are doing are really putting a lot of pressure on the defense. Well, it's time that the defense put pressure back on the offense. And so there's a call for more defense coordinators to be
creative. What you think the Raiders might do Monday night.
Yeah.
In attacking the offensive left side of the Broncos in Clady's absence, right?
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, if you're the defensive coordinator for the Raiders, I already smell blood. You haven't even strapped it up yet, and I smell blood. I'm going to test that left tackle, and I'm going to test him first play. We're bringing pressure. We're bringing pressure from the seven technique, from the strong safety. We're bringing pressure to see what has Denver done. Are they going to go with the assumption that this kid can play out on an island by himself?
Chris Clark,
can he play out on an island by himself, or do we need to help him? And I'm going to test you right away. That's some of the creativity that I think we lack. For example, on defense, dictate to the offense. Be able to understand there's different, you know, when we hear people talk about the three, you got a three-man front or a four-man front. Sandy, in reality.
You say that's all bunk.
It's all bunk. It's in conceptualization, everything is played from what we call a 50 and then you reduce. It's a 50 reduction defense. Just because that seven technique has his hand in the dirt doesn't make it a 4-3. You stand him up, it's a 3-4. Right. They can still have the same gap responsibility.
Sure.
They same have this, play the same technique. So there's really no such thing as a three or a four-man front. It's a reduction from the 50-man front. And so I think we need to understand that you can line up a guy in a seven technique, which is outside the, you know, inside eye of the tight end, and drop him into coverage. So he's a seven technique, then you drop him into coverage. If you think back to
the Broncos doing this with airs now. And they have him covering.
Right, absolutely.
A fair amount of the time. It's fascinating, actually.
And I think the dynamic that I'm trying to get at, Sandy, is that, you know, coaches in the NFL make decisions based on protecting the lead, protecting their job. You know, I once met a coach at the University of Florida when my daughter was being recruited there. Becky Burley, she's the head soccer coach. And she went and introduced me to Ron Zook. He was the head coach there at that time, Billy Donovan. And I'm sitting down there with Billy Donovan. And this was off the record. But he's like, you know, most coaches coach not to lose.
Yes.
Because, you know, they're protecting a salary. They're protecting their family. Imagine if we saw in the NFL coaches coaching just to win. Okay. In other words, you have four downs. How many downs do we use in football? We use three downs. And then we punt, you know. Why don't more teams scheme to go for it? Why don't more teams block punts?
All the metric people say that teams don't go for it on fourth down nearly often enough. That's what all the metric people tell you.
And qualitatively, we need to understand that you can change the game that way. I mean, I've coached many years at the high school level. I can remember when I was coaching at Mullen High School, and I'm telling our head coach, Mick McCall, who's now the offensive coordinator at Northwestern, and I'm saying, let's go get this punt. He's like, no, we better not, because if we rough them, you know, they're going to keep the ball. Well, okay, but I think we can get the punt, okay, so let's go get it. But there's not enough coaches that are not, I mean, they're not liberal enough. They're too conservative because they're protecting their job. So what I think we need to do, have in the NFL, is more innovative coaches that are willing to take risks and coach from a perspective to win and not to protect, not to lose.
Do you see on the college level, we talked about Chip Kelly early in the program today, who's now getting criticized as much as he's sanctified after the first game. Now he's getting ripped. And both views are probably extreme and unfair. But is Chip Kelly an example maybe of the best of what you're talking about?
Yes.
Not afraid to try things.
Right.
Even if they don't work in the short term, he's not afraid to keep trying. I mean, I don't suspect in Philadelphia he's going to slow down.
Right, and I think we need to give him time. It's too early. We're three games in. We need to give him time, let his offense take root, let, you know, coach it up. You know, he's got coaches on that staff that are probably not necessarily familiar with what he's trying to do. It takes time to build offenses. It takes time to build defense. You got to coach alignment, stance, technique. You got to get these guys going in the right direction. So we've got to reward people like Chip Kelly and not, you know, say, oh, he's, you know, he's doing something that's very different. It'll never work in the NFL. Well, we don't know. You know, when Tex Schramm in the early 1970s, you know, signed Bob Hayes, everyone said, oh, he's a track guy. But he began to revolutionize the game because all of a sudden defensive coaches said, wait a minute, we got to get speed to cover that speed.
Sure.
Then they got faster running backs, and then defensive coordinators said, we got to get linebackers that can cover those running backs.
Yeah.
And there you have the beginning of revolutionizing the game. So we've got to give a break and let Chip Kelly play out some more games and let us see where his scheme goes. But I think we can do a much better job in the NFL at thinking outside of the box, being more creative, especially on the defensive side of the ball.
And you say playing to probability is not the same thing as being creative.
No.
In fact, they're opposing
right
forces.
Right. Probability is safe, and it'll probably keep you your job. But at the same time, it really doesn't allow your personnel to deploy itself in creative and innovative ways.
All right. 303-228-1043 for Dr. Rick Perea, 295-88 Total Beverage Text Line on this Bud Light Football Friday. Sandy Clef with you. Your home for the best live and local coverage of the Broncos and the NFL remains Denver's sports station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
You need cool.
11:19, I'm a fan. Sandy Clef with you. Bud Light Football Friday on your home for the best live and local coverage of the Broncos and the NFL. Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan is Denver's sports station. Dr. Rick Perea, our in-studio guest. Some thoughts on the Total Beverage text line at 29588. Example of what you're talking about, creative thinking, which you say is not exactly in great supply when it comes to, as the coaching profession in general and football in particular. Sean Payton deciding to onside kick it in the second half of the Super Bowl a few years back. Exactly what you're talking about. Need more coaches willing to take risks. More coaches like Sean Payton makes the game more exciting.
Yes, absolutely. And so if the NFL really wants to make the game more dynamic, okay, it needs to create a climate where coaches are willing to take a chance. Again, but you have those high salaries. I mean, there's not many jobs that pay multi-million dollar a year, so therefore those coaches are going to protect that. But if you can create a climate where a coach feels comfortable enough to make some of those decisions, then I think it really does enhance the game. I think that decision's a great example.
Yeah.
Because I'll tell you what, when I used to coach high school football, I'll give you an example just of the different levels of high school. I've always coached 5A. And then my last year of coaching, I coached at a school called Rock Canyon, which is 4A.
Right.
And I couldn't believe all the different punt formations I saw from 4A teams from the difference in 5A. In 5A, usually people line up in a typical
same thing.
Yeah. Punt formation. I must have saw five or six different punt formations at the 4A level that really had me scratching my head. How do I defend this? How do we stop them? And teams that were willing to fake it. And you know what? A lot of them got first downs on it. So I know that, you know, last night we saw swinging gate. We call it swinging gate. We're at the extra point where they line up all the offensive linemen to one side.
Right.
Swinging gate was back from the 40s. But I'll tell
sure.
you what, you know, you look at the two-point conversion. Why don't more people go for the two-point conversion? Why don't more people put pressure on the other team? You know, you already have the defense psychologically beaten down. You just scored on them, Sandy. You just scored on a defense. They're down psychologically. They're probably down physiologically. You can, you know, that's 2.5 yards, and you can scheme it. I think we've really got to come out of this box of, again, protecting leads, playing not to lose, and really go after people and attack them.
And that seems to be what the Broncos have done in their first two games. Take two games that at least for times in the third quarter were relatively close and break out of it. And this rather amazing figure of their having scored, going back to the first game of last year, almost 90% of their points in the final three quarters.
Yes.
They haven't scored a single point this year out of the 90 they've scored in the first quarter. All 90 have come in quarters 2, 3, and 4. Last year, they only scored 66 of the 481 points that they scored all year in the first quarter. Actually, the 66-point output last year in the first quarter is middle of the road.
Yes.
Half the teams ahead of them, half the teams below them. It's average. It's normal. What they're doing in the last three quarters isn't normal, particularly in the second half, coming out halftime in the third quarter. We were talking during the break about all the stuff that comes from Peyton Manning before the snap. All of the here's the mic stuff, 53 is the mic,
right,
and
right.
Hurry, hurry, hurry.
Right.
And you say it is all designed to just give the defense something more to contend with. And the defense ought to come right back with some of those verbal cues, because it isn't as if only Peyton Manning can tell you who the middle linebacker is if you're on offense. The center knows.
Right.
The linemen know who the middle linebacker is.
Right.
But it has a purpose.
Absolutely. It has a psychological purpose. When Manning comes up to the line and says, 53 is a mic, 53 is a mic, The center's making the call line calls. The center knows who
Manny Ramirez knows who the freaking mic is.
He knows who the mic is. Again, it's that human communication element that's meant to get in the head of the defense. The defense can do the same thing. Pre-snap, you know, they can stem. They're moving around. The linebacker calls top, top, top. That's when everybody adjusts and get back to their original gap responsibility. And they can call out their own plays, too. I mean, they can point out who's going where, what's the coverage, and literally deploy their personnel based on where they want to go and make the offense start to think about things, too. Get Peyton Manning thinking about things. The mic linebacker can communicate right back. As soon as he says, there's the mic, there's the mic, there's the mic, then they can say, well, there's the H-back, there's the H-back, there's the ace back, and this
sure.
is what, you know, and get right back in their head and calling stems and calling top to be able to really get them off their game.
It is amazing. Vic Lombardi was telling the story this week, and he had it confirmed from inside the Bronco organization, inside the coaching staff, that there was a play, the touchdown pass to Welker, the other day that Manning threw. And the Broncos are down, what is it, 2-3 yard line. And they have a running play called. And everybody knows it's a running play. The personnel is designed for it to be a running play. And everything's set as they approach the line of scrimmage. Manning sees the defense, holds one finger up, communicates with Welker as a result. They snap the ball. Everybody is behaving as if it's a running play, even on the offensive side. Only Manning and Welker know that it's going to be a pass play, and they make it work. The touchdown.
Yeah.
Kind of an example of what you're talking about.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But see,
that they're one step ahead of
yeah, they're one
everybody,
step ahead.
Even yeah. one step ahead of the other nine players on their own offense who think it's going to be a running play and block it as if it's a running play.
Right.
But they know how the defense will react. They know that pass will be open.
Right.
6 points.
Right. Well, I mean, again, the defense has to be more creative in their verbal war of words, if you will, by coming up to the line, strong safeties calling out, you know, strong weak side. And the other thing they can do is, you know, you have X and a Z receiver.
Yep.
You can walk up to the line of scrimmage and say, Z, 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 we got a razor on Z, Z, Z. What the heck does that mean? Nothing. But it means that the offense is starting to think, well, what the heck are they doing in their coverages?
That's right.
What are they doing? How are they deploying their guys? So I think, we've got to be more creative as defensive coordinators in fighting back this avalanche of spread offense and people taking control and most importantly, Sandy, controlling the tempo of the game.
And from the 303s, we get set to break. Peyton Manning is a master of psychological warfare. He thinks like a field general. The first time I ever saw Manning in person was 10 years ago on a snowy, extremely cold night at what was then Invesco Field at Mile High. And I was at the game with my son and we're watching it. And I looked down at him, remembering my own early days watching the Johnny Unitas Colts in old Yankee Stadium against the New York Football Giants. That's a field general.
Yep.
That's a field general. The same way Unitas was with all those psychological cues that Unitas employed, too.
You bet.
That's Peyton Manning 50 years later.
Yep.
All right. 303-228-1043, 295-88, Total Beverage text line. We continue with Dr. Rick Perea. In studio on a Bud Light Football Friday, this is your home for the best live and local coverage of the Broncos and the NFL. Sports Radio, 104.3 The Fan, Denver Sports Station. It is 11:33 on a Bud Light Football Friday here on Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. Sandy Clef with you. Dr. Rick Perea, our in-studio guest on your home for the best live and local coverage of the Broncos and the NFL. We're talking during the break, and you've made mention of this a little bit. You said the best soccer coach you ever knew had a basketball background, and you're talking before about coaches and knowing their personnel and putting speed where it can be most useful, putting bulk and strength into positions where it can be most useful. You think that's a given, but we're always surprised when we watch sports on any level when that isn't applied correctly.
Yes.
When you have speed, but you don't use it
right
in the right ways.
Yes. It's not deploying your personnel in an appropriate manner. We have a term called KYP, know your personnel. You need to understand what your personnel fits and gives you the best chance to create mismatches. The best soccer coach I ever know is a guy named Eric Jensen. He's a club coach here with Colorado Storm.
Yeah.
He had a basketball background. And so you might say, well, how's a basketball coach going to be a great soccer coach? He was able to see soccer from different angles. He was able to see soccer from a different perspective, and it made it very unique. He understood how to create mismatches. You know, I was watching Alabama play DU girls soccer about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I'm watching Alabama's team on their wings, on their offensive wings. For those of you who know soccer, you got to have speed on your wings to be able to create possessions where you can get up the field, cross the ball, and have scoring opportunities, right? They had some of their slowest girls playing on the outside wings. That's an example of not understanding your own personnel and how to create those opportunities. Now, there's soccer coaches out there right now. I can hear their headers curling. They're turning in their graves. They're like, well, that's not how to control the ball or possess the ball. Well, again, the object of the game is to put the ball in the back of the net, and it's going to give you scoring opportunities. So I think there's a lot of examples of how coaches don't understand how to necessarily deploy personnel. I'll give you a great example with the Broncos. I think Jeff Del Rio's done a great job. You look at their Mike linebacker, Wesley Woodyard. There's a lot of coaches in the NFL that would not play him at Mike.
Oh, can't. He's 220 pounds.
He's 220 pounds. He's undersized.
Yeah.
But if you use him in creative ways, you know, take advantage of his athleticism. You know, the other kid, Trevathan,
yeah,
is very athletic, great speed. They're using those kids in situations where they can use their speed. They're not using them to bang away on those guards, bang away on those tackles, because they're not, you know, their bodies won't hold up.
That's what the defensive tackles are for,
right,
to shield them from,
right,
those kinds of people.
And so they use them in creative ways. So it's an example of how coaches don't necessarily know how to deploy their personnel based on their competencies and their abilities.
Yeah. 303-228-1043-295-88, Total Beverage Text Line. Let's grab a phone call from Lars. You're on the fan with Sandy Clef and Dr. Rick Berea. Good morning, Lars.
Morning, Sandy. I just want to let you know I arrived safe but hardly sound in Las Vegas.
All right.
So,
well,
I knew you were worried about
I appreciate the distinction. Yes, I was worried about you.
My question is about Von Miller.
Sure.
And Sandy and I had a conversation about this, and it's my contention, Dr. Perea, that this guy is all about self-destruction. Nobody pulls, albeit minor, traffic court non-appearances and traffic tickets with all the attention he's got. I've just seen too many people in my life that, whether subconscious or not, they just find a way to continually mess up. And what I'd ask is, I'd like to hear your answer if you'd put me back on, because being in Vegas, I can't get your show.
Okay, we'll put you on hold and get Dr. Perea's response to that question about Von Miller.
Well, I think, based on what I know, and let me say this, I've never met Von, never observed him necessarily in practice or anything, just what I've seen on the field and what I've read about him. But I can honestly say this. I remember, you know, during his rookie year when Von would make a play, you know, tackle for loss, all right, TFL we call him. He'd make a tackle for loss, not even a sack, but just a tackle for loss. There would be a game where they'd be losing, and he'd do his nice little dance that he does. And that told me right there, okay, the scoreboard, you're losing. You just made a tackle for loss. Good play,
yeah,
but it's an everyday play.
Right.
And that leads me to somewhat narcissistic tendencies, which would be consistent with him not taking care of some of his day-to-day obligations, his, you know, his practices and norms that you and I have to take care of. So I would lean towards more of a narcissistic, very egocentric personality with Von Miller. But it's something that can be coached up, too.
Quickly on Miller, there's a piece in USA Today this morning. Headline, Doomerville has mind on Miller. Subheadline, Ravens linebacker prays for suspended friend. And in there are quotes, and Elvis Doomerville seems to be sincere, well-meaning. But this psychological dynamic of Doomerville, older brother, Miller, younger brother, now Doomerville's gone. Since he left, all this bad stuff has either happened or come to light. And I'm not saying Elvis Doomerville is advancing this idea himself, but it's kind of the impression you get in reading the piece. I'm looking at that as being something less than a trained psychologist, obviously, and I'm saying, I'm not sure how well Von Miller comes off in this piece.
Yes.
Well, he appears overly dependent on someone who's no longer here.
Yeah, well, I think it highlights or illuminates the role that Elvis played when he was here as a mentor for Elvis. And I think it was important. And I think that goes on for a lot of players. I heard Peyton Manning say the other day on the radio that Todd Helton was his mentor when he first got to Tennessee.
Yes.
You know, we all need mentors at times. And Vaughn may have needed one, you know. And now that Elvis is gone, I think the Broncos – either subconsciously or consciously underestimated that aspect of their relationship, that he needed Vaughn or that he needed Elvis in his life. So I would caution anybody to say that, you know, he's out of control. I think that he is somewhat narcissistic, which a lot of players in the NFL, he's somewhat egocentric, which a lot of players in the NFL are, but you know, he may need a little more tutoring than the average player. And if he does, that's okay. Now Elvis is gone, but they got to find somebody else that fits that role, to protect your investment from an organizational perspective.
Does it have to be a player? Could it be a coach? Could it be some other? You've mentioned the term advocate for a player within an organization. We talked about Raheem Moore. I think you turned out to be right. It turned out, apparently, during the offseason, Raheem Moore had plenty of advocates within the organization, and he seems to be. I could have lived without the interception he made the other day. Knocked the ball down on fourth down, son.
Yeah.
Give your team those 26 yards of additional field position. I know the score is 38-16, but basically, Raheem Moore seems to have come out of it well. Does Vaughn Miller need some of that same kind of reinforcement?
I think so, and I think what worked particularly well with Elvis is they were both – on opposite ends from each other, bookends, if you will, and they both were kind of sack specialists. And they really, Elvis kind of took him under his wing and helped him, and really, to this point, we're finding out that it really played a major role in his life off the field. But I think that it can be done by other people, too. It's not only a player. It can be somebody who comes in that really works with him on a one-on-one basis. But the key is that Vaughn has to trust them. Vaughn, there has to be some element of a built-up trust so they can really work together. It can't just be, okay, here's this guy or here's this lady that's going to work with you once a week in terms of your belief systems and your self-efficacy. Right. It's got to be some mutual trust and some mutual respect. And usually that would come better from a player than some outside advocate.
Tom, you're on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan with Sandy Clough and Dr. Rick Perea. Good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. To the point, it seems like the great coaches have people skills and leadership skills that are unique. And things in Boulder seem so different now under Coach McIntyre. Do you have any thoughts about him?
Dr. Perea, great question. Great question.
Yes.
In terms of Mike McIntyre not only coming in and having a tangible effect on how practices are conducted and organized, for example, but psychologically, CU seems to be in such a different place
as
a football team.
Yeah, Tom, that's very well said and very astute. The great coaches have great people skills and communication skills. Yeah. Because, you look at McIntyre and you look at his facial expressions. And again, these are nonverbal communication. You look at his facial expression and he's always got kind of a can-do attitude. If not
absolutely
smiling, if
it's not dour, it's not down in the dumps, it's not woe is me.
Right. He's always, kind of got a half smile or a full smile on, and he's always this can-do guy. You know, when they went on that little round-the-state touring thing where he was connecting with people, that really fit his style because he's a people person. He connects with people. And what's the best way to connect with people? You look them in the eye, you smile, you connect with them, you give them support. And there's a lot of football coaches that don't do that. They do not connect with people. And it's amazing because, a football coach needs to be the leader of people. And we look to them for leadership that's verbal, that's nonverbal. So I think Tom brings up a great point. People skills, communication skills, all those connective pieces that are really important to help build this person's self-belief system are vitally important. And the great coaches have it.
More of your calls, more of your texts. We'll get to the reasons, good, bad, that CSU is taking on Alabama tomorrow afternoon on the road as a 39.5-point underdog at the moment. Sandy Clough, Dr. Rick Perea, Bud Light Football Friday here on Denver Sports Station. Sports Radio, 104.3 The Fan. Stay with us. Sandy Clough, Dr. Rick Perea on this Bud Light Football Friday here on The Fan. Bud Light, the official beer sponsor of the NFL. Here we go. Throughout the rest of the day, of course, Drew and Scott, noon to 3. And from 3 to 6, it's Big Al and D-Mac with the drive right here on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. Want to get to a couple more points before we let Rick go and conclude affairs here at the top of the hour. But meantime, we'll go to Ray on the phones here on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan with Sandy Clough and Dr. Rick Perea. Good morning, Ray.
Good afternoon. How are you, gentlemen?
We're doing well.
Great, Ray.
Sandy, I want to go way back. I know you remember a guy named Paul Smith that played for the Broncos.
Sure.
Well, he was a good friend of mine. Met him at the dog track where I worked.
All right.
And he didn't talk much about football, but I asked him one time. He lived with my wife and I for about a year. And I asked him, who was the greatest quarterback you ever played against? And he said, well, I don't know. But he said, I'll tell you, the coolest I ever played against was Unitas. He said he'd walk to the line of scrimmage and look over there and say, 57, we're coming right at you.
Yeah.
And he'd run a draw play, or he'd say, 70, we're going to trap your butt and run right over me. He said, I never saw anybody that could do things like that. Manning is kind of like that.
That's a great story. And Paul Smith, one of the great pass-rushing Bronco defensive linemen at the beginning of an era in which defense mattered around here. It's kind of shifted with the great quarterbacks we've had here, the Hall of Famers to be, with respect to Manning, of course, and obviously John Elway for 16 years. But Paul Smith was a big part of those first years in which we understood that defense could make a difference. And that brings full circle to your point about how it's time for the defense to push back, Dr. Perea, a little bit against that kind of psychological warfare employed by Peyton Manning now and 50 years back, more than 50 years back, really, at the beginning of John Unitas's great career. But I wanted to get to a couple of points. You're talking about coaches, decision makers afraid to make mistakes that might cost them their job. There's a magnificent profile this week in the Denver Post by Terry Fry of John Wriston, CSU Pueblo coach, a man for whom you have great respect and admiration, I know.
Yes, absolutely. You know, John is a great mind in the game of football. He's assistant coach with Gary Barnett at CU, went up to Northwestern, and then was with Carl Durrell at UCLA. But what he's done down in Pueblo with that CSU Pueblo football team is nothing less than amazing. I mean, he took a program that has been down for 20-some years, and his first year there, 4-6, second year, I think 7-3, 7-4, but they've been ranked number one in the nation the last 2 years in a row. And so I got a call from him earlier this summer. He says, can you come down and talk to my coaches? Help us get better at leadership. You know, we've been ranked number one, but we get deep into the playoffs, and how do we take that next step? And Sandy, my point is that great coaches look for help. They ask other people to come in. What do you see that we're missing? What do you see that we have our blinders on to? And they were incredibly open. You know, Steve Sewell's on that staff and went down there and had a great time with those coaches. And they just beat UNC. You know, they just beat a Division II school, just beat a Division I school. So, you know, organizations like that, coaches that are open, willing to take chances. And he gave me an example of one situation, Sandy, that put chills through my spine. I asked him what leadership did he deploy that he felt like really made a difference in this organization. And he said, and he said, Dr. P, I'm going to tell you what. We had 4th-and-4 on our own 47 at Chadron State. And I got on the headphones and I asked our defensive coordinator, Hunter Hughes, and he said, can I go for it? Can you stop him if we don't get it? And he said, at that moment, Coach Hughes looked at me and said, we didn't come here to be average. We didn't come here to be something we're not. He says, go for it. We'll deal with it. They got the first down. But what Coach Wriston said, from that moment on, that collective team had a belief system and efficacy that they could do something above and beyond what was typically being done in that conference. And he said that decision, going for it on 4th-and-4 on their own 47, having the coaches buy in, the players buy in, was the step that they needed. But if I'll just say this, if anybody wants to see great level college football, it's not only in Boulder and CSU, it's down in Pueblo as well.
Absolutely. Or in Colorado Springs, anywhere else. We've got a terrific game tomorrow night, Wyoming at Air Force. But yes, CSU Pueblo is well worth watching. All right, speaking of decisions, CSU's to schedule Alabama at Alabama, the first of two games that they'll be playing, of course, both played from CSU's perspective on the road. We know about 1.5 million reasons why they might be going, but
yes,
overall, in the context that you specialize in describing and attempting to create, this is a good decision for CSU to play this game?
Well, financially it is. There's, you know, one, like you said, 1.5 million reasons why, and that's a good decision. The only downfall, I think, to this game is, you know, they're going to go into Tuscaloosa. They're going to play an Alabama team that could be one of the best they've had. You know, we look at that A&M game last week and say, oh, what happened to their defense? But if you watch that game carefully, there were some ebbs and flows there that could have went the other way, and it could have been a 3-touchdown win for Alabama
absolutely, pretty
easily. But they're going to go into Tuscaloosa, and they're going to see a whole different level of climate and culture down there. We, you know, my wife played volleyball at Alabama, so we've been around that program, and I know Joe Panunzio.
And you know Saban well.
And, yeah, and the RVs start rolling in town on Wednesday afternoon from all over the state of Alabama, and it's a different level. So CU is I mean, they're a 39, I think, and a half-point
yes.
underdog.
Yep.
And that may be very gentle because I'll tell you what, Alabama – but the good thing is that McElwain will take his kids in there. They'll see how it's done at the top levels. Not that CSU ever aspires, because I think financially, geographically, and all those reasons, they're never
right.
going to be in a place like in Alabama. But at least give those players a touch or a taste of how it's done at the highest levels. I just hope, okay, from an efficacy or from a belief system perspective – that they don't get themselves beat down too much psychologically and really kind of suffer some ramifications that later on psychologically could have a detrimental effect. I don't think that'll happen, but there's always that chance in playing such a powerhouse or such a mismatch in that context.
It's been an interesting couple of weeks for Saban, and we've got a couple minutes left. The Texas rumors.
Yes.
All right.
Oh, boy.
And then the business that came out leading up to the A&M game at Alabama, the Yahoo Sports allegation that two former players, along with players at other colleges, accepted impermissible benefits from Alabama, and Saban got irritated at one point in a press conference last week and walked out because the reporters were asking him about this, and
right.
he wanted to talk about the game.
Right. Well, I think it's really interesting timing that some of these stories are coming out right now. The thing with Texas, I think that's inevitable. It's going to happen. There's going to be people that, you know, plant seeds that said, you know, he's open to looking
Could
at some of these top jobs.
Could you see him leaving? I mean, nobody has more money than Texas does.
Right. Nobody has no more money than
they
Texas.
They could pay him twice what he's making now at Alabama, and he's making big money at Alabama.
Right.
Texas could pay him twice that.
Right. But if you know Coach Saban, I don't think money's his motivator. He's not an extrinsic guy. He's an intrinsic guy. And I think he really, you know, his family likes it down there. He's got a great coaching staff. He really likes the South. He likes the SEC. And I don't personally see him leaving, but I think it doesn't hurt him in any respect because it helps him in his, you know, next negotiation. And I'm sure his agent looks at it that way too. But I certainly don't see him leaving. I think he loves that community down there in Tuscaloosa. And I see him being open to saying, hey, you know what? That's why I hire my agent to do. My agent is out there to really look at other opportunities too. Because after all, let's get right back to it, Sandy. We are talking about organizations when we talk about sport teams.
Absolutely.
At the core level.
Absolutely. You've taught us that. You've taught us well over the past 8 months. We look forward to your next appearance here in a couple of weeks. You're always a big hit. Text line, phone calls. We love having you here. We appreciate your time today, as always.
Well, Sandy, I tell you, I really enjoy being here. It's nice to be around someone like yourself who's analytical, critical thinking, all those skills that I try to teach my students out there. And I'll promise you this, okay?
Yes.
Next time I come, I will wear either blue or orange, and I won't be in black, okay?
All right. Well, I think the next appearance would be scheduled for somewhere around October 4th, which is 2 days prior to the Dallas game. I think you can avoid Dallas colors pretty easily.
Yeah, I'll just wear blue to be safe. That covers Dallas and Denver.
Right, right. Then that's perfectly neutral, very objective, the way we want it right here in the morning. All right, we make our way now for Drew and Scott just a few moments away, but thank you for listening. Adam Meyer earlier on from RealMoneySports.com, and of course for the past 90 minutes, Dr. Rick Perea, Professor of Sports Psychology, Metro State, and the University of Colorado. It's a Bud Light Football Friday on your home for the best live and local coverage of the Broncos and the NFL. Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio, 104.3 The Fan.